So first I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me a chance to come up here and speak. So the subject of this talk is derived algebraic geometry and elliptic cohomology. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how the philosophy of derived algebraic geometry can shed some light on some of the dark issues in elliptic cohomology. So let me begin with a review of what elliptic cohomology is and how it comes about. So to start with, let's suppose that R is an even periodic ring spectrum. So R is a ring spectrum. Even means that pi I of R is equal to 0 for I odd. And periodic means that there exists an invertible element in pi 2 of R. So the canonical example to keep in mind is complex K-theory. The odd K groups of a point vanish, and Bott periodicity tells you that there's this invertible Bott element in the K-theory of in pi 2 of K. So if you have one of these even periodic ring spectra, it's a very interesting thing you can do is to consider the cohomology of CP infinity with coefficients in R. And if you go to compute this, you find that the Atiyah-Hirzebruch spectral sequence degenerates, and this turns out to be non-canonically isomorphic to a formal power series ring in one variable over the R cohomology of a point. But something even stronger is true. It's not just any formal power series ring, but if you think about the space CP infinity, it's the classifying space for complex line bundles. And complex line bundles sort of have a group structure because you can take tensor products of line bundles. And consequently, the space CP infinity has the structure of a commutative group up to homotopy. And when you translate that into cohomology, R cohomology in this case, you find that this ring actually has the structure of the ring of functions on a formal group over pi 0 of R. So let A denote pi 0 of R. This formal spectrum, SPF, is going to mean the formal spectrum of some kind of power series ring. The formal spectrum of the cohomology of CP infinity, this is a formal group over the ring A. So by formal group in this talk, I'm always going to mean the kind of formal groups that homotopy theorists are interested in, namely commutative one-dimensional formal groups. So we have this construction that starts with an even periodic ring spectrum and gives you a ring, namely pi 0 of the ring spectrum, and a formal group over that ring. And this is a construction which is very important in stable homotopy theory. And one of the useful things about this construction is that in many circumstances you can reverse it. Namely, you would start with a ring A, and by ring I also mean commutative ring. You start with a ring A and you start with a formal group over A, and in many circumstances you can then construct out of that a cohomology theory which is representable by an even periodic ring spectrum. So a sufficient condition for you to be able to do this was given by Landweber in the Landweber exact functor theorem. I don't want to say exactly what it is, but let me just remark that you can often do this. So as an example, A could be the ring Z, and the formal group you could take to be the multiplicative formal group. And in that circumstance, the Landweber criterion is satisfied, and you can actually construct a cohomology theory, and that cohomology theory is complex K-theory. So that's a very interesting cohomology theory, and maybe that was a good motivation for people to start thinking this might be a construction which could produce a lot of other interesting cohomology theories. So this is sort of where elliptic cohomology comes from a purely homotopy theoretic point of view, you can just think we're trying to produce interesting cohomology theories that come from interesting formal groups. And one interesting way to get a formal group is to start with an elliptic curve and take the formal completion at the identity. So if you want to contemplate this, it's convenient to make the following definition, which I believe is due to Mike Hopkins. An elliptic spectrum consists of three pieces of data: an even periodic ring spectrum R, an elliptic curve E over the ordinary ring pi 0 of R, and an isomorphism between of formal groups between this formal group that we considered right here, the formal spectrum of the R cohomology of CP infinity, and the formal completion of the elliptic curve, which I'm going to denote by E hat. So, sort of the point of this is that if I just give you this data, namely I tell you what pi 0 of R is, and I tell you the elliptic curve, well, that determines the formal completion, and so then you could ask for a cohomology theory giving rise to that formal group, and under many circumstances it exists, and is, you know, in some sense, sort of canonically associated to the elliptic curve. So anytime you have one of these elliptic spectra, you can think this is some kind of version of elliptic cohomology. And you can hope that maybe it will be interesting. So there are a couple of problems with saying that elliptic cohomology is this, a couple of sort of unsatisfying things. So the first is, if you start just with the elliptic curve E over the ring pi 0 of R, it doesn't really functorially determine R. If Landweber's criteria are satisfied, it will functorially determine a cohomology theory, and then you can apply Brown representability to deduce that that cohomology theory is represented by a spectrum, but you can't produce the spectrum. It's only sort of an abstract existence result. So problem number one is that the formation of elliptic cohomology is not really functorial in the elliptic curve. A second problem is, if we're hoping to get some interesting cohomology theories out of this, we're going to want to understand things like their multiplicative structure. And although using these sorts of Landweber exact functor theorem and Brown representability arguments, you can often deduce that some kind of spectrum exists and supports maybe a naively commutative and associative ring spectrum structure, that's really not very much in the sort of game of doing algebra with spectra. You'd really like to get one of these juicier, more structured ring spectra, like an A-infinity ring spectrum or an E-infinity ring spectrum, where you have associativity and commutativity of multiplication, not just up to homotopy, but up to coherent homotopy, or on the nose, depending on how you choose to model it. So problem number two is that you want good multiplicative structures. And again, this is something that you're not going to be able to see in a spectrum that you just produce from cohomology theory using the Brown representability theorem. Thinking about that cohomology theory, maybe you can see sort of homotopy commutative multiplications, but the much richer structure that you have on spectra like K-theory are just not going to be visible from that point of view. And problem number three is, well, there's an awful lot of these things. Do we really want to call any one of these ring spectra that we produce in this way elliptic cohomology? There would be so many. So it would be nice if there was some canonical choice of one, or some which was universal in some sense. And then we could call that elliptic cohomology. So these three problems are sort of simultaneously addressed by the construction due to Mike Hopkins and Haynes Miller of the spectrum of topological modular forms. So let me describe sort of how you address these problems. First, let's think about problem number three. You know, there's too many elliptic spectra. Well, that's really because there are too many elliptic curves. If you want to consider a universal elliptic spectrum, you would need to consider some kind of a universal elliptic curve over a ring. And this is not something that really makes sense. Or maybe it makes sense, but it's not something which exists. So in algebra geometric terminology, algebraic geometers have sort of wrestled with this question already, so we can, you know, take what they figured out as our starting point. So in algebraic geometry, if you go to classify elliptic curves, well, you find out that there isn't a universal elliptic curve over a ring. In other words, the moduli problem classifying elliptic curves, it's not solved by an affine scheme. In fact, it can't be solved by any scheme, but it can be solved by an algebraic stack. So I'm going to let M denote it's an algebraic stack. And this is what they call the moduli stack of elliptic curves. I think it's usually denoted by M11. So if you don't know what an algebraic stack is, you know, don't worry about it so much. Just imagine this is some kind of a classifying space for elliptic curves, which means that any time I have some y, then I get sort of a bijective correspondence between maps from Y into M and on one side and elliptic curves over Y. On the other side. So this is really the reason that algebraic stacks exist, because people who do algebraic geometry want to have an object that classifies elliptic curves and also pretend that they can do geometry with it. So what does it mean that they can do geometry with it? Well, one thing that it means is that you can consider open. You can sort of cover this object M with open pieces which look like affine schemes. So suppose that you have some affine scheme which is sort of like an open piece of M. Then in particular, you have something mapping to M, so you get an elliptic curve over this base spec A. So once you have A and that elliptic curve over it, you can hope to expand that data and get an elliptic spectrum. And in fact, any time this is sort of an open over the moduli stack of elliptic curves, Landweber's criterion is satisfied, and so you can construct that spectrum. So, in other words, any time we have some U over M, we can construct what we might call, I'm going to call it for reasons which will become clear later, O derived of U. And this is going to be the elliptic spectrum corresponding to A and the elliptic curve, let's call this map eta, classified by eta. So now what is this data O derived? Well, we're assigning roughly to every open subset of M, we're assigning some kind of cohomology theory. So really, what O derived is a pre-sheaf on M with values in the homotopy category of spectra. So this is where issue number one really comes back and makes itself felt. The construction of this elliptic spectrum, given the ring A and the elliptic curve, it wasn't functorial on the level of spectra, it was only functorial on the level of cohomology theories. So with a little bit more work, you can get it to be functorial on the level of the homotopy category of spectra, but this is sort of a not a very useful gadget, a pre-sheaf with values in the homotopy category of spectra. It's hinting that there ought to exist something much better, which would be a pre-sheaf of spectra, but passing from this to that better thing involves an awful lot of specifying an awful lot of additional data, solving hard obstruction theory problems. So that problem is very hard, but one of the key observations that Mike and Haynes made is that if you try and solve problems 1 and 2 simultaneously, then somehow it becomes much easier. That is, you have all of these spectra that you can assign to the different U's, and you're trying to glue them all together. And if you try to glue them just as spectra, then it's kind of hard because you have a lot of freedom. But if you require that they sport these fancy multiplicative structures, then they get a lot harder to glue together. So there's a lot less freedom, and the computations about the obstructions to listing this to an actual sheaf with values in spectra, those computations become more tractable, and you can actually do them. So let me state that as a theorem. Actually, let me call this O-derived bar. So, theorem, and I think, tell me if I'm giving credit wrong for this. Due to Gorse, Hopkins, and Miller, which is this pre-sheaf with values in the homotopy category of spectra admits a lift and I'm going to say essentially unique lift to a pre-sheaf which I'll now call O-derived with values in E infinity ring spectra. So this is what does this tell you? Well, it lets you construct what they call TMF for topological modular forms. Namely, once you have a sheaf which actually takes values in the category of spectra, you have constructions that you can do, like taking the global sections. And roughly speaking, topological modular forms is obtained by taking the global sections of this sheaf O-derived. So this is nice, and it sort of addresses these questions, because now we have our universal elliptic cohomology theory, something that deserves to be called the official version of elliptic cohomology, and along the way, we also forced it to have the best possible kind of multiplicative structure, an E-infinity ring structure. But there are some still unsatisfying things about the situation. So if you go into the way this is proven, essentially what they do is they try and study the space of all O-derived, which would be such lifts. And they try and analyze this space using a giant obstruction theory machine. And they do a lot of heavy calculations which get at some of the homotopy groups of this space. And in particular, they prove that this space of possible O-derived is non-empty and connected. So non-empty means that O-derived exists, and connected means that O-derived is unique in some weak sense. It's unique up to homotopy. But I believe that this space is not contractible, so it shouldn't really be considered a construction of O-derived. It should be considered more along the lines of an abstract existence proof. You haven't completely uniquely pinned down the object that you want. And this is a problem if you want to export this construction to other contexts. So, for example, from this point of view, I don't think anybody has any idea how to construct equivariant versions of elliptic cohomology. So what I'd like to devote this talk to is explaining how the philosophy of derived algebraic geometry can suggest a different approach to constructing this object, which sheds a lot more light on, you know, what it is and how you can work with it. So now I'm going to sort of switch gears and begin talking about derived algebraic geometry. So what is derived algebraic geometry? A rough answer would be derived algebraic geometry is what you get if you take ordinary algebraic geometry and you let homotopy theorists run amok. So let me be a little bit more precise than that. You might say ordinary algebraic geometry is the study of schemes. So let me write the definition of a scheme on the board for purposes of running amok with it. So a scheme is a topological space X with a sheaf of rings OX, which locally looks like spec A, where A is a commutative ring. So, derived algebraic geometry, you might say, is the study of derived schemes, where derived schemes are given by the same definition, except instead of using plain old ordinary commutative rings, we're going to use some fancier version of commutative rings that's supplied by homotopy theory. So there are several fancier versions that we could use, but for purposes of this lecture, only one of them is relevant. So, and that is to use E-infinity ring spectra. So a derived scheme is going to be a topological space with a sheaf of E-infinity ring spectra OX, which locally looks like spec A, where A is now going to be an E-infinity ring spectrum. So, of course, even if you know what an E-infinity ring spectrum is, this definition doesn't necessarily make sense to you because I need to tell you how to take spec of an E-infinity ring spectrum. And the answer, let me do it here. It's actually not as bad as you might be thinking. So let's say that R is an E-infinity ring spectrum. then if I consider the ring A, which is pi naught of R, that's an ordinary commutative ring. No. How about this is A, and this is pi 0 of A? All right. So let A be an E-infinity ring spectrum. Well, spec A as topological spaces I define this to be spec of pi naught of A. It's the set of prime ideals in the ring pi naught of A. So that's not so scary. What's the difference between spec A and spec pi naught of A? Well, spec A is going to have a different structure sheaf. So to explain what that is, let's recall that this space has a basis consisting of open sets U sub F, which is the set of all prime ideals that do not contain F. So this is contained in spec A, or spec pi naught A, whenever F is an element of pi naught of A. So this is a basis for our open sets, and if you recall the definition of the spectrum in the ordinary case, O spec pi naught of A, evaluated on one of these open sets U sub F, what do? You just take the ordinary commutative ring pi naught of A, and you adjoin an inverse to the function F. F is an element of pi 0 of A. So we're going to do almost exactly the same thing. Spec A, topologically, it's the same as spec pi naught of A. We have the same open basis for open sets. Here F ranges over pi naught of A. But we're going to just change one little thing here and erase this. So instead of taking pi naught of A inverting F and inverting F, we're going to take all of A and invert F. And we get some kind of E infinity ring spectrum. And that's going to be the value of the structure sheaf of spec A on U sub F. So the way you should think about these things is that they're essentially, one of these derived schemes is essentially a scheme plus a little bit more. So it'll have an underlying scheme, which, roughly speaking, you just get by taking the same space and throwing away all of the homotopy groups in the structure sheaf except for pi 0. Just take pi 0 of the structure sheaf. So that's an underlying... Oh, let me write that down somewhere. If X is a derived scheme, then there exists an underlying ordinary scheme, which I'll denote by X ord. So, for example, if A is an E-infinity ring spectrum, and I take spec A, that's a derived scheme, and the underlying ordinary scheme is just the classical spec of pi naught of A. So that's the definition of a derived scheme. Now you might ask, what's the point? Algebraic geometry was hard enough without inserting E-infinity ring spectra, or conversely, E-infinity ring spectra were hard enough without inserting this weird geometric aspect. So there are actually a number of good reasons why you might be interested in these things. If you're an algebraic geometer, then thinking about these things can help you to understand deformation theory and intersection theory. And if you're a homotopy theorist, then contemplating these things gives you sort of a new geometric way of working with E-infinity ring spectra. And we're going to see that that has some useful applications to understanding elliptic cohomology. So there's one other example that we already have on the board of something like a derived scheme. I misplaced it. No, it's not here. Here it is. So, if you look at what's produced by this Gorse-Hopkins-Miller theorem, it's a sheaf of E-infinity ring spectra on the classical moduli stack of elliptic curves. That's essentially what I've defined here. The only reason it doesn't qualify as a derived scheme is because the classical moduli stack of elliptic curves doesn't qualify as a scheme. It's an algebraic stack. So if you like, what they've actually constructed is a derived algebraic stack. So let me make a definition. So if you take sort of the underlying space, and I'll put space in quotes, really I should say topos, of the moduli stack M, and give it O derived as a new structure sheaf, then we get sort of a derived version of the classical moduli stack M. So we get something that I'm going to call M derived. So it's some kind of fancy version of the moduli stack of elliptic curves, which encodes all of the information in elliptic cohomology in some sense. So now the question is, you know, this is a geometric object in our setting of derived schemes. What role does it play? You know, the underlying ordinary object is the moduli stack of elliptic curves. That has something to do with classifying elliptic curves. What does this thing do? So the first guess is that this has something to do with classifying some kind of derived version of elliptic curves. So first, let's try and make sense of that statement. So suppose that Y is a derived scheme. Definition. An elliptic curve over Y is three pieces of data. Well, first of all, it's a map of derived schemes from E to Y, satisfying three conditions. So condition number one, first, the map P should be flat. So I haven't told you what flatness means, but it's something which makes sense in ordinary algebraic geometry. It also makes sense in derived algebraic geometry. It's essentially saying this is a nice family of objects parameterized by Y. So condition number two, the underlying map of ordinary schemes should be an elliptic curve over Y in the ordinary sense. And if we just stop with 1 and 2, we get some kind of notion of a derived elliptic curve that, you know, E is a derived scheme. So if we just stop with 1 and 2, we get some version of the notion of an elliptic curve. But it's not going to be satisfactory for us, because one of the most important things about elliptic curves classically is that they have this commutative group structure. In fact, if you take an elliptic curve in the setting of classical algebraic geometry, it acquires a unique group structure as soon as you specify what the identity is. So in this setting, that actually turns out to be false. The group structure on an elliptic curve, as defined by 1 and 2, is not uniquely determined, even if we specify an identity section. So it's something that, if we want, we have to add. So 3 is really not a condition, but additional data. E is a, I'm going to put it in quotes, very commutative group. So what do I mean by that? Well, E has some kind of multiplication on it, and we're now sort of in a homotopy theoretic setting, so when you say a multiplication is commutative, there are an awful lot of things that you could mean, and condition 3, I really mean to say that this is it's commutative in the strongest possible sense that you could demand. Yeah. All right, so this is an elliptic curve, so our first guess at the meaning of M-derived might be perhaps M-derived classifies these derived elliptic curves. And that turns out not to be right. And in order to figure out what is right, let's go back to this notion of an elliptic spectrum and modify it a little bit. So this notion of an elliptic spectrum is sort of outdated. It needs to be jazzed up using our new derived algebraic geometry technology. So an enriched elliptic spectrum consists of here we had an even periodic ring spectrum R. Well, a ring spectrum is not really such a great thing, as I mentioned already. You should really demand that you have lots of commutativity and associativity up to higher homotopies. So let me say instead an E-infinity ring spectrum R. And I'm going to drop the even periodic assumption, because it's a little bit unnatural for what I'm about to say. So next, classically, for an elliptic spectrum, we're supposed to give an elliptic curve over pi naught of R. But now, look what we've got. We can make sense of a much better thing, which is an elliptic curve, now one of these fancy derived elliptic curves, over R itself. And finally, we're supposed to supply some kind of isomorphism of formal groups over the ring pi naught of R, between some kind of formal completion of E and something that's constructed just out of homotopy theory. Well, once we're in the setting of derived algebraic geometry, it's more natural to get an isomorphism of these formal groups not over pi naught of R, but over R itself. So this additional data is an equivalence between this thing that we construct purely out of homotopy theory. We take R to the CP infinity. That's an E infinity ring spectrum that has this thing as its pi naught, and we take some kind of derived formal spectrum of that. And this should be isomorphic as some kind of derived version of a formal group to, this should be an elliptic curve, E, to the formal completion of E, did I change the notation there? So basically, you take all of these things and you just jazz them up a little bit so that you're demanding not just classical algebra geometric information, but derived algebra geometric information. So now the main theorem, which I guess this lecture is about, asserts that this is the moduli problem that's represented by M-derived. So I can state it in the following way. For any E infinity ring spectrum A, there's a natural bijection, or really homotopy equivalence, because each of these things can be thought of as a space, between maps from spec A into M derived and enriched elliptic spectra structures on A. So in other words, M-derived classifies elliptic curves in this derived sense, equipped with the following additional data, which is sort of a specified structure near the identity. So this is a theorem which is a characterization of M-derived, but really, that's probably not the best way to state it, because what you actually see is that this theorem gives a new construction of M-derived. Namely, start with this moduli problem. Say you want to classify elliptic curves equipped with this additional structure. Then you can apply the methods of derived algebraic geometry to actually construct a geometric object which represents that moduli problem. That part is kind of easy, and the hard part is you take out your magnifying glass and you look really close at this geometric object, and you see that it has all of the properties that you would expect of the M-derived that's constructed by the Gorse-Hopkins-Miller theorem. Namely, you see that sort of the underlying space is the classical you get the classical moduli stack of elliptic curves, and if you look at the structure sheaf, it's sort of like a sheaf of elliptic spectra corresponding to those elliptic curves. So, how much time do I have now? 15 minutes. So, I don't really have time to tell you anything at all about how this is proven, but instead, I'll give you sort of a feel for it by talking about the analog for K-theory. So just like elliptic cohomology, TMS and things like that are supposed to be associated to the formal groups that come from elliptic curves, K-theory is supposed to be associated to the multiplicative group. So let's try and understand the analogous moduli problem where we replace elliptic curves with just the multiplicative group. So this is a much easier problem, because if you look at this definition for elliptic curves, you're really trying to classify two things separately. First, you're trying to classify elliptic curves, and then you're trying to classify these kinds of isomorphisms. So the first of those steps doesn't really have an analog for the multiplicative group. No, you don't have to classify the multiplicative group. It's just there. So really, we only have to worry about this second step. So let R be an E-infinity ring spectrum, and let's contemplate isomorphisms that we could write down between this thing that we might call spoof of R to the CP infinity and the formal completion of the multiplicative group. So what kind of structure do we need on R in order to have an isomorphism of formal groups like this? So the first thing that we need, step one, have a map. For from spoof of r to the CP infinity into GM hat. So now we just sort of formally manipulate this to figure out what it means. Well, to give a map from a formal group into the formal completion of something, by the definition of the formal completion, essentially, that's the same thing as giving a map from spoof r to the CP infinity into GM. All right, now, r to the CP infinity, that's like a product of copies of r parameterized by CP infinity. And this spoof functor takes products into unions. So really, you should think of this, this is the same thing as sort of a family of maps from spec R into GM parameterized by the space CP infinity. And now it's going to spill over into the next board. Well, what is a map from R into the multiplicative group? That's just an element in the multiplicative group of R. So what we're actually trying to classify are maps from CP infinity into GL1 of R. And moreover, we want maps that are sort of compatible with the E infinity structures on both sides. So what classifies these things? Well, to give a map from CP infinity to GL1 of R, that's the same thing as giving a map from the suspension spectrum of CP infinity into R. So this suspension spectrum of CP infinity, it represents having a map from this formal group into the formal completion of the multiplicative group. But we don't want just any map. We want an isomorphism. So step two, when is this an isomorphism? Well, that's just a condition. And morally, these ought to be sort of one-dimensional formal groups over the same base. So in order for a map between them to be an isomorphism, it suffices to check some kind of derivative is invertible. So it makes sense, should be at least plausible, that this is going to be iso if and only if something that we find is invertible. So if you chase through the definitions, which I haven't given you, you can figure out what that thing needs to be. Namely, F2, think of that as CP1. It sits inside of CP infinity. And of course, CP infinity maps to the suspension spectrum of CP infinity. Maps into the zeroth space of it, if you like. So that means that we have a canonical element in pi 2 of the suspension spectrum of CP infinity. So, man, I use up these boards fast. So we get beta in pi 2 of sigma infinity CP infinity. And this is the thing that needs to be invertible in order for this map that we've constructed to be an isomorphism. So now, I'm going to cite an old theorem of Snaith. Which says that if you take the suspension spectrum of CP infinity and you invert this element beta, then what you get is classical complex K-theory. So what I'd like to say is this is the interpretation of this is that complex K-theory classifies isomorphisms between the multiplicative formal group and this formal group that comes out of CP infinity. So that's sort of the multiplicative group analog of the theorem which I wrote down right here. But the proof for elliptic cohomology is very different, and I don't really think I can outline it here. So I have about 8 minutes left, and I would like to use them to tell you about how great this theorem is. And so what is so great about this theorem? So first of all, it removes all ambiguity from the definition of elliptic cohomology. So TMF before, it was sort of unique up to homotopy, but this is unique on the nose. We've specified a moduli problem. That moduli problem has a unique, well, it has a solution by this theorem, and it pins down that solution up to a contractible space of choices. So another thing, good thing about this theorem is that it puts elliptic cohomology into this geometric context and frees you up to use geometric ideas to understand many of the things that you might want to do with elliptic cohomology. So for example, elliptic cohomology is supposed to have a string orientation. And you can construct, you can give a very conceptual construction of that string orientation using this language of derived elliptic curves and so on. And in fact, you get not only an ordinary string orientation, but you get equivariant versions of it. Now, when I'm saying that, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. Another thing that this point of view gives you is equivariant versions of elliptic cohomology. So where do they come from? Well, this theorem tells you that you have a lot more than M-derived. Since M-derived classifies these elliptic curves with extra structure, you have, in particular, a universal elliptic curve over M-derived. That universal elliptic curve, in a certain sense, which I don't have time to explain, encodes the structure of S1 equivariant elliptic cohomology. And more generally, you know, if you take some power of that elliptic curve over M-derived, then you can understand torus equivariant elliptic cohomology. And by various elaborations of this idea, you can define equivariant versions of elliptic cohomology for any compact group. And these equivariant versions seem like they're going to have the expected relationship with the representation theory of loop groups. So they look like the right thing. Another piece of evidence that they're the right thing is that we have the sort of K-theory analog of this story, and you can use that to sort of make the same geometric constructions over K-theory. In that case, you don't really need the geometry because everything is affine. The essential reason why you need derived algebraic geometry to do this sort of thing is that we're encountering elliptic curves, and those aren't affine, so we can't understand them just as E-infinity ring spectra. They're E-infinity ring spectra glued together in weird ways. So, but even in this K-theory case, if you sort of do the geometry anyway, even though it's not needed, then you see from this purely geometric point of view, you can construct equivariant versions of K-theory, and those equivariant versions of K-theory coincide with the usual equivariant versions of K-theory. So I think I will stop there.